Audible Frontiers presents The Legacy, written by R.A. Salvatore, narrated by Victor Bavine. Prelude. The rogue Dinan made his way carefully through the dark avenues of Menzo Berenzon, the city of Drow. A renegade, with no family to call his own for nearly 20 years, the seasoned fighter knew well the perils of the city and knew how to avoid them. He passed an abandoned compound along the 2-mile-long cavern's western wall and could not help but pause and stare. Twin stalagmite mounds supported a blasted fence around the whole of the place and 2 sets of broken doors, one on the ground and one beyond a balcony 20 feet up the wall, hung open awkwardly on twisted and scorched hinges. How many times had Dinan levitated up to that balcony, entering the private quarters of the nobles of his house, House Doerden? It was forbidden even to speak the name in the Drow city. Once, Dinan's family had been the 8th ranked among the 60 or so Drow families in Menzo Berenzon. His mother had sat on the ruling council, and he, Dinan, had been a master at Melee Magvir, the school of fighters at the famed Drow Academy. Standing before the compound, it seemed to Dinan as if the place were 1,000 years removed from that time of glory. His family was no more. His house lay in ruins, and Dinan had been forced to take up with Bregan d'Airth, an infamous mercenary band, simply to survive. "Once," the rogue Drow mouthed quietly. He shook his slender shoulders and pulled his concealing Puafwi cloak around him, remembering how vulnerable a houseless Drow could be. A quick glance toward the center of the cavern, toward the pillar that was Narbandel, showed him that the hour was late. At the break of each day, the Archmage of Menzo Berenzon went out to Narbandel and infused the pillar with a magical, lingering heat that would work its way up, then back down. To sensitive Drow eyes, which could look into the infrared spectrum, the level of heat in the pillar acted as a gigantic glowing clock. Now Narbandel was almost cool. Another day neared its end. Dinan had to go more than halfway across the city to a secret cave within the Claw Rift, a great chasm running out from Menzo Berenzon's northwestern wall. There, Jarlaxle, the leader of Bregan d'Airth, waited in one of his many hideouts. The Drow fighter cut across the center of the city, passed right by Narbandel and beside more than 100 hollowed stalagmites, comprising 12 separate family compounds, their fabulous sculptures and gargoyles glowing in multicolored fairy fire. Drow soldiers, walking posts along house walls or along the bridges connecting multitudes of leering stalactites, paused and regarded the lone stranger carefully. Hand crossbows or poisoned javelins held ready until Dinan was far beyond them. That was the way in Menzo Berenzon. Always alert, always distrustful. Dinan gave 1 careful look around when he reached the edge of the Claw Rift, then slipped over the side and used his innate powers of levitation to slowly descend into the chasm. More than 100 feet down, he again looked into the bolts of readied hand crossbows, but these were withdrawn as soon as the mercenary guardsmen recognized Dinan as one of their own. "Jarlaxle has been waiting for you," one of the guards signaled in the intricate silent hand code of the Dark Elves. Dinan didn't bother to respond. He owed commoner soldiers no explanations. He pushed past the guardsmen rudely, making his way down a short tunnel that soon branched into a virtual maze of corridors and rooms. Several turns later, the dark elf stopped before a shimmering door, thin and almost translucent. He put his hand against its surface, letting his body heat make an impression that heat-sensing eyes on the other side would understand as a knock. "At last," he heard a moment later in Jarlaxle's voice. Do come in, Dinan, my Calabiel. You have kept me waiting far too long. Dinan paused a moment to get a bearing on the unpredictable mercenary's inflections and words. Jarlaxle had called him Calabiel, my trusted friend, his nickname for Dinan since the raid that had destroyed House Doerden, a raid in which Jarlaxle had played a prominent role, and there was no obvious sarcasm in the mercenary's tone. There seemed to be nothing wrong at all. But why, then, had Jarlaxle recalled him from his critical scouting mission to House Vandry, the 17th house of Menzo Baranzon, Dinan wondered. It had taken Dinan nearly a year to gain the trust of the imperiled Vandry House Guard, a position, no doubt, that would be severely jeopardized by his unexplained absence from the house compound. There was only one way to find out, the rogue soldier decided. He held his breath and forced his way into the opaque barrier. It seemed as if he were passing through a wall of thick water, though he did not get wet, and after several long steps across the flowing extraplanar border of two planes of existence, he forced his way through the seemingly inch-thick magical door and entered Jarlaxle's small room. The room was alight in a comfortable red glow, allowing Dinan to shift his eyes from the infrared to the normal light spectrum. He blinked as the transformation completed, then blinked again, as always, when he looked at Jarlaxle. The mercenary leader sat behind a stone desk, in an exotic cushioned chair, supported by a single stem with a swivel so that it could rock back at a considerable angle. Comfortably perched as always, Jarlaxle had the chair leaning way back, his slender hands clasped behind his clean-shaven head, so unusual for a drow. Just for amusement, it seemed, Jarlaxle lifted one foot onto the table, his high black boot hitting the stone with a resounding thump, then lifted the other, striking the stone just as hard, but this boot making not a whisper. The mercenary wore his ruby-red eye patch over his right eye this day, Dinan noted. To the side of the desk stood a trembling little humanoid creature, barely half Dinan's 5.5-foot height, including the small white horns protruding from the top of its sloping brow. "One of House O'Blodra's kobolds," Jarlaxle explained casually. "It seems the pitiful thing found its way in, but cannot so easily find its way back out." The reasoning seemed sound to Dinan. House O'Blodra, the third house of Menzo Baranzon, occupied a tight compound at the end of the Claw Rift, and was rumored to keep thousands of kobolds for torturous pleasure, or to serve as house fodder in the event of a war. "Do you wish to leave?" Jarlaxle asked the creature, in a guttural, simplistic language. The kobold nodded eagerly, stupidly. Jarlaxle indicated the opaque door, and the creature darted for it. It had not the strength to penetrate the barrier, though, and it bounced back, nearly landing on Dinan's feet. Before it even bothered to get up, the kobold foolishly sneered in contempt at the mercenary leader. Jarlaxle's hand flicked several times, too quickly for Dinan to count. The drow fighter reflexively tensed, but knew better than to move, knew that Jarlaxle's aim was always perfect. When he looked down at the kobold, he saw five daggers sticking from its lifeless body, a perfect star formation on the scaly creature's little chest. Jarlaxle only shrugged at Dinan's confused stare. "I could not allow the beast to return to O'Blodra," he reasoned. "Not after it learned of our compound so near theirs." Dinan shared Jarlaxle's laugh. He started to retrieve the daggers, but Jarlaxle reminded him that there was no need. "They will return of their own accord," the mercenary explained, pulling at the edge of his bloused sleeve to reveal the magical sheath enveloping his wrist. "Do sit," he bade his friend, indicating an unremarkable stool at the side of the desk. "We have much to discuss."
"Why did you recall me?" Dinan asked bluntly as he took his place beside the desk. "I had infiltrated Vandry fully."
"Ah, my Calabiel," Jarlaxle replied.
always to the point. That is a quality I do so admire in you.
Ulnir,
Dinan retorted, the drow word for liar. Again the companions shared a laugh, but Jarlaxle's did not last long, and he dropped his feet and rocked forward, clasping his hands, ornamented by a king's hoard of jewels, and how many of those glittering items were magical, Dinan often wondered, on the stone table before him, his face suddenly grave.
"The attack on Vandry is about to commence," Dinan asked, thinking he had solved the riddle.
"Forget Vandry," Jarlaxle replied. "Their affairs are not so important to us now."
Dinan dropped his sharp chin into a slender palm propped on the table. Not important, he thought. He wanted to spring up and throttle the cryptic leader. He had spent a whole year. Dinan let his thoughts of Vandry trail away. He looked hard at Jarlaxle's always calm face, searching for clues. Then he understood.
"My sister," he said.
And Jarlaxle was nodding before the word had left Dinan's mouth.
"What has she done?"
Jarlaxle straightened, looked to the side of the small room, and gave a sharp whistle. On cue, a slab of stone shifted, revealing an alcove, and Vierna de Werden, Dinan's lone surviving sibling, swept into the room. She seemed more splendid and beautiful than Dinan remembered her since the downfall of their house. Dinan's eyes widened as he realized the truth of Vierna's dressings. Vierna wore her robes. The robes of a high priestess of Loth, the robes emblazoned with the arachnid and weapon design of House de Werden. Dinan did not know that Vierna had kept them, had not seen them in more than a decade.
"You risk,"
he started to warn. But Vierna's frenzied expression, her red eyes blazing like twin fires behind the shadows of her high ebony cheekbones, stopped him before he could utter the words.
"I have found again the favor of Loth," Vierna announced.
Dinan looked to Jarlaxle, who only shrugged and quietly shifted his eye patch to his left eye instead.
"The Spider Queen has shown me the way,"
Vierna went on, her normally melodic voice crackling with undeniable excitement. Dinan thought the female on the verge of insanity. Vierna had always been calm and tolerant, even after House de Werden's sudden demise. Over the last few years, though, her actions had become increasingly erratic, and she had spent many hours alone in desperate prayer to their unmerciful deity.
"Are you to tell us this way that Loth has shown to you?" Jarlaxle, appearing not at all impressed, asked after many moments of silence.
"Drist!"
Vierna spat the word, the name of their sacrilegious brother, with a burst of venom through her delicate lips. Dinan wisely shifted his hand from his chin to cover his mouth, to bite back his retort. Vierna, for all her apparent foolhardiness, was, after all, a high priestess and not one to anger.
"Drist?" Jarlaxle calmly asked her. "Your brother?"
"No brother of mine," Vierna cried out, rushing to the desk as though she meant to strike Jarlaxle down.
Dinan didn't miss the mercenary leader's subtle movement, a shift that put his dagger-launching arm in a ready position.
"Traitor to House de Werden," Vierna fumed. "Traitor to all the drow!"
Her scowl became a smile suddenly, evil and conniving.
"With Drist sacrifice, I will again find Loth's favor, will again—"
Vierna broke off abruptly, obviously desiring to keep the rest of her plans private.
"You sound like Matron Malice," Dinan dared to say. "She too began a hunt for our for the traitor."
"You remember Matron Malice?"
Jarlaxle teased, using the implications of the name as a sedative on overexcited Vierna. Malice, Vierna's mother and matron of House de Werden, had ultimately been undone by her failure to recapture and kill the traitorous Drizzt. Vierna did calm down, Then she began a fit of mocking laughter that went on for many minutes.
"You see why I summoned you?" Jarl Axel remarked to Dinan, taking no heed of the priestess.
"You wish me to kill her before she can become a problem?"
Dinan replied equally casually. Vierna's laughter halted. Her wild-eyed gaze fell over her impertinent brother.
"Wisha!" she cried, and a wave of magical energy hurled Dinan from his seat, sent him crashing into the stone wall.
"Kneel!"
Vierna commanded, and Dinan, when he regained his composure, fell to his knees, all the while looking blankly at Jarl Axel. The mercenary, too, could not hide his surprise. This last command was a simple spell, certainly not one that should have worked so easily on a seasoned fighter of Dinan's stature.
"I am in Lolf's favor,"
Vierna, standing tall and straight, explained to both of them.
"If you oppose me, then you are not, and with the power of Lolf's blessings for my spells and curses against you, you will find no defense."
"The last we heard of Drizzt placed him on the surface," Jarl Axel said to Vierna to deflect her rising anger. "By all reports, he remains there still." Vierna nodded, grinning weirdly all the while, her pearly white teeth contrasting dramatically with her shining ebony skin.
"He does," she agreed. "But Lolf has shown me the way to him, the way to glory."
Again, Jarl Axel and Dinan exchanged confused glances. By all their estimates, Vierna's claims, and Vierna herself, sounded insane. But Dinan, against his will and against all measures of sanity, was still kneeling. Part 1. The Inspiring Fear.
Nearly 3 decades have passed since I left my homeland. A small measure of time by the reckoning of a drow elf, but a period that seems a lifetime to me. All that I desired, or believed that I desired, when I walked out of Menzo Berenzon's dark cavern, was a true home, a place of friendship and peace, where I might hang my scimitars above the mantle of a warm hearth and share stories with trusted companions. I have found all that now, beside Brunner, in the hallowed halls of his youth. We prosper. We have peace. I wear my weapons only on my 5-day journeys between Mithril Hall and Silvery Moon. Was I wrong? I do not doubt, nor do I ever lament my decision to leave the vile world of Menzo Berenzon. But I am beginning to believe now, in the endless quiet and peace, that my desires at that critical time were founded in the inevitable longing of inexperience. I had never known that calm existence I so badly wanted. I cannot deny that my life is better, 1,000 times better than anything I ever knew in the Underdark. And yet, I cannot remember the last time I felt the anxiety, the inspiring fear of impending battle, the tingling that can come only when an enemy is near or a challenge must be met. Oh, I do remember the specific instance. Just 1 year ago, when Wulfgar, Guinevar, and I worked the lower tunnels in the cleansing of Mithril Hall. But that feeling, that tingle of fear, has long since faded from memory. Are we then creatures of action? Do we say that we desire those accepted clichés of comfort, when in fact it is the challenge and the adventure that truly give us life? I must admit, to myself at least, that I do not know. There is one point that I cannot dispute, though. One truth that will inevitably help me resolve these questions, and which places me in a fortunate position. For now, beside Brunner and his kin, beside Wulfgar and Catti Bree and Guinevar, dear Guinevar, my destiny is my own to choose. I am safer now than ever before in my 60 years of life. The prospects have never looked better for the future, for continued peace and continued security.
And yet, I feel mortal. For the first time, I look to what has passed rather than to what is still to come. There is no other way to explain it. I feel that I am dying, that those stories I so desired to share with friends will soon grow stale, with nothing to replace them. But, I remind myself again, the choice is mine to make. Dresd Doerden. Chapter 1. Spring Dawning. Dresd Doerden walked slowly along a trail in the jutting southernmost spur of the Spine of the World mountains, the sky brightening around him. Far away to the south, across the plain to the Evermoors, he noticed the glow of the last lights of some distant city, Nesme, probably, going down, replaced by the growing dawn. When Dresd turned another bend in the mountain trail, he saw the small town of Settlestone far below. The barbarians, Wolfgar's kin from faraway Icewind Dale, were just beginning their morning routines, trying to put the ruins back in order. Dresd watched the figures, tiny from this distance, bustle about, and he remembered a time not so long ago when Wolfgar and his proud people roamed the frozen tundra of a land far to the north and west, on the other side of the great mountain range 1,000 miles away. Spring, the trading season, was fast approaching, and the hardy men and women of Settlestone, working as dealers for the dwarves of Mithril Hall, would soon know more wealth and comfort than they ever would have believed possible in their previous day-by-day existence. They had come to Wolfgar's call, fought valiantly beside the dwarves in the ancient halls, and would soon reap the rewards of their labor, leaving behind their desperate nomadic ways as they had left behind the endless, merciless wind of Icewind Dale. "How far we have all come," Dresd remarked to the chill emptiness of the morning air, and he chuckled at the double meaning of his words, considering that he had just returned from Silvery Moon, a magnificent city far to the east, a place where the beleaguered Drow Ranger never before dared to believe that he would find acceptance. Indeed, when he had accompanied Brunner and the others in their search for Mithril Hall barely 2 years before, Dresd had been turned away from Silvery Moon's decorated gates. "You've done 100 miles in a 10-day alone," came an unexpected answer. Dresd instinctively dropped his slender black hands to the hilts of his scimitars, but his mind caught up to his reflexes and he relaxed immediately, recognizing the melodic voice with more than a little of a dwarvish accent. A moment later, Catty Bree, the adopted human daughter of Brunner Battlehammer, came skipping around a rocky outcropping, her thick auburn mane dancing in the mountain wind, and her deep blue eyes glittering like wet jewels in the fresh morning light. Dresd could not hide his smile at the joyous spring in the young girl's steps, a vitality that the often vicious battles she had faced over the last few years could not diminish. Nor could Dresd deny the wave of warmth that rushed over him whenever he saw Catty Bree, the young woman who knew him better than any. Catty Bree had understood Dresd and accepted him for his heart, and not the color of his skin, since their first meeting in a rocky, wind-swept vale more than a decade before, when she was but half her present age. The dark elf waited a moment longer, expecting to see Wolfgar, soon to be Catty Bree's husband, follow her around the bluff. "You have come out a fair distance without an escort," Dresd remarked when the barbarian did not appear. Catty Bree crossed her arms over her chest and leaned on one foot, tapping impatiently with the other.
"And you're beginning to sound more like me father than me friend," she replied. "I see no escort walking the trails beside Dresd Doerden."
"Well spoken," the Drow Ranger admitted, his tone respectful and not the least bit sarcastic. The young woman's scolding had pointedly reminded Dresd that Catty Bree could take care of herself. She carried with her a short sword of dwarven make, and wore fine armor under her furred cloak, as fine as the suit of chainmail that Brunner had given to Drizzt. Talmoril the Heartseeker, the magical bow of Anariel, rested easily over Catti Bree's shoulder. Drizzt had never seen a mightier weapon, and even beyond the powerful tools she carried, Catti Bree had been raised among the sturdy dwarves by Brunner himself, as tough as the mountain stone.
"Is it often that ye watching the rising sun?"
Catti Bree asked, noticing Drizzt's east-facing stance. Drizzt found a flat rock to sit upon, and bade Catti Bree to join him. "I have watched the dawn since my first days on the surface," he explained, throwing his thick forest-green cloak back over his shoulders. "Though back then it surely stung my eyes, a reminder of where I came from, I suppose. Now, though, to my relief, I find that I can tolerate the brightness."
"And well that is,"
Catti Bree replied. She locked the drow's marvelous eyes with her intense gaze, forced him to look at her, at the same innocent smile he had seen those many years before on a wind-swept slope in Icewind Dale, the smile of his first female friend.
"'Tis sure that ye belong under the sunlight, Drizzt O'Urden,"
Catti Bree continued,
"as much as any person of any race, by me own measure."
Drizzt looked back to the dawn and did not answer. Catti Bree went silent too, and they sat together for a long while, watching the awakening world.
"I came out to see ye,"
Catti Bree said suddenly. Drizzt regarded her curiously, not understanding.
"Now, I mean,"
the young woman explained.
"We'd word that ye'd returned to Settlestone, and that ye'd be coming back to Mithril Hall in a few days. I've been out here every day since."
Drizzt's expression did not change. "You wish to talk with me privately?" he asked, to prompt a reply. Catti Bree's deliberate nod as she turned back to the eastern horizon revealed to Drizzt that something was wrong.
"I'll not forgive ye if ye miss the wedding,"
Catti Bree said softly. She bit down on her bottom lip as she finished, Drizzt noted, and sniffled, though she tried hard to make it seem like the beginnings of a cold. Drizzt draped an arm across the beautiful woman's strong shoulders.
"Can you believe for an instant, even if all the trolls of the Evermoors stood between me and the ceremony hall, that I would not attend?"
Catti Bree turned to him, fell into his gaze, and smiled widely, knowing the answer. She threw her arms around Drizzt for a tight hug, then leaped to her feet, pulling him up beside her. Drizzt tried to equal her relief, or at least to make her believe that he had. Catti Bree had known all along that he would not miss her wedding to Wulfgar, two of his dearest friends. Why then the tears, the sniffle that was not from any budding cold, the perceptive ranger wondered. Why had Catti Bree felt the need to come out and find him only a few hours from the entrance to Mithril Hall? He didn't ask her about it, but it bothered him more than a little. Any time moisture gathered in Catti Bree's deep blue eyes, it bothered Drizzt O'Urden more than a little. Jarlaxle's black boots clacked loudly on the stone as he made his solitary way along a winding tunnel outside of Menzo Berenzon. Most drow out alone from the great city, in the wilds of the Underdark, would have taken great care. But the mercenary knew what to expect in the tunnels, knew every creature in this particular section. Information was Jarlaxle's forte. The scouting network of Bregan de Earth, the band Jarlaxle had founded and taken to greatness, was more intricate than that of any drow house. Jarlaxle knew everything that happened or would soon happen in and around the city, and armed with that information, he had survived for centuries as a houseless rogue. So long had Jarlaxle been a part of Menzo Baranzon's intrigue that none in the city, with the possible exception of First Matron Mother Beenry, even knew the sly mercenary's origins. He was wearing his shimmering cape now, its magical colors cascading up and down his graceful form, and his wide-brimmed hat, hugely plumed with the feathers of a diatrima, a great flightless underdark bird, adorned his clean-shaven head. A slender sword dancing beside one hip and a long dirk on the other were his only visible weapons. But those who knew the sly mercenary realized that he possessed many more than that, concealed on his person but easily retrieved if the need arose. Pulled by curiosity, Jarlaxle picked up his pace. As soon as he realized the length of his strides, he forced himself to slow down, reminding himself that he wanted to be fashionably late for this unorthodox meeting that Crazy Vierna had arranged. Crazy Vierna. Jarlaxle considered the thought for a long while, even stopped his walk and leaned against the tunnel wall to recount the High Priestess's many claims over the last few 10 days. What had seemed initially to be a desperate, fleeting hope of a broken noble, with no chance at all of success, was fast becoming a solid plan. Jarlaxle had gone along with Vierna more out of amusement and curiosity than any real beliefs that they would kill or even locate the long-gone Drizzt. But something apparently was guiding Vierna. Jarlaxle had to believe it was Lolth, or one of the Spider Queen's powerful minions. Vierna's clerical powers had returned in full, it seemed, and she had delivered much valuable information and even a perfect spy to their cause. They were fairly sure now where Drizzt Do'Urden was, and Jarlaxle was beginning to believe that killing the traitorous drow would not be such a difficult thing. The mercenary's boots heralded his approach as he clicked around a final bend in the tunnel, coming into a wide, low-roofed chamber. Vierna was there with Deenan, and it struck Jarlaxle as curious. Another note made in the calculating mercenary's mind, that Vierna seemed more comfortable out here in the wilds than did her brother. Deenan had spent many years in these tunnels, leading patrol groups, but Vierna, as a sheltered noble priestess, had rarely been out of the city. If she truly believed that she walked with Lolth's blessings, however, then the priestess would have nothing to fear. "You have delivered our gift to the human?" Vierna asked immediately, urgently. Everything in Vierna's life, it seemed to Jarlaxle, had become urgent. The sudden question, not prefaced by any greeting or even a remark that he was late, caught the mercenary off guard for a moment, and he looked to Deenan, who responded with only a helpless shrug, while hungry fires burned in Vierna's eyes, defeated resignation lay in Deenan's. "The human has the earring," Jarlaxle replied. Vierna held out a flat, disc-shaped object, covered in designs to match the precious earring. "It is cool," she explained, as she rubbed her hand across the disc's metallic surface. "Thus our spy has already moved from Menzo Baranzon." "Far away with a valuable gift," Jarlaxle remarked, traces of sarcasm edging his voice. "It was necessary and will further our cause," Vierna snapped at him. "If the human proves to be as valuable an informant as you believe," Jarlaxle added evenly. "Do you doubt him?" Vierna's words echoed through the tunnels, causing Deenan further distress and sounding clearly as a threat to the mercenary. "It was Lolth who guided me to him," Vierna continued with an open sneer. "Lolth who showed me the way to regain my family's honor. Do you doubt?" "I doubt nothing where our deity is concerned," Jarlaxle promptly interrupted. "The earring, your beacon, has been delivered as you instructed, and the human is well on his way." The mercenary swept into a respectfully low bow, tipping his wide-brimmed hat. Vierna calmed and seemed appeased. Her red eyes flashed eagerly, and a devious smile widened across her face. "And the goblins?" she asked, her voice thick with anticipation.
They will soon make contact with the greedy dwarves, Jarlaxle replied, to their dismay, no doubt. My scouts are in place around the goblin ranks. If your brother makes an appearance in the inevitable battle, we will know.
The mercenary hid his conniving smile at the sight of Vierna's obvious pleasure. The priestess thought to gain only the confirmation of her brother's whereabouts from the unfortunate goblin tribe. But Jarlaxle had much more in mind. Goblins and dwarves shared a mutual hatred as intense as that between the drow and their surface elf cousins, and any meeting between the groups would ensure a fight. What better opportunity for Jarlaxle to take an accurate measure of the dwarven defenses and the dwarven weaknesses? For while Vierna's desires were focused, all that she wanted was the death of her traitorous brother. Jarlaxle was looking at the wider picture of how this costly exploration up near the surface, perhaps even onto the surface, might become more profitable. Vierna rubbed her hands together and turned sharply to face her brother. Jarlaxle nearly laughed aloud at Dinan's feeble attempt to imitate his sister's beaming expression. Vierna was too obsessed to notice her less than enthusiastic brother's obvious slip.
"The goblin fodder understand their options?" she asked the mercenary.
But she answered her own question before Jarlaxle could reply.
"Of course they have no options."
Jarlaxle felt the sudden need to burst her eager bubble.
"What if the goblins kill Drizzt?" he asked, sounding innocent.
Vierna's face screwed up weirdly, and she stammered unsuccessfully at her first attempts at a reply.
"No," she decided at length. "We know that more than 1,000 dwarves inhabit the complex, perhaps 2 or 3 times that number. The goblin tribe will be crushed."
"But the dwarves and their allies will suffer some casualties," Jarlaxle reasoned.
"Not Drizzt," Dinan unexpectedly answered. And there was no compromise in his grim tone, and no argument forthcoming from either of his companions. "No goblin will kill Drizzt. No goblin weapon could get near his body."
Vierna's approving smile showed that she did not understand the sincere terror behind Dinan's claims. Dinan alone among the group had faced off in battle against Drizzt.
"The tunnels back to the city are clear?"
Vierna asked Jarlaxle, and on his nod she swiftly departed, having no more time for banter.
"You wish this to end," the mercenary remarked to Dinan when they were alone.
"You have not met my brother,"
Dinan replied evenly, and his hand instinctively twitched near the hilt of his magnificent drow-made sword, as though the mere mention of Drizzt put him on the defensive.
"Not in combat, at least."
"Fear? Kal Abil?"
The question went straight to Dinan's sense of honor, sounded more like a taunt. Still, the fighter made no attempt to deny it.
"You should fear your sister as well," Jarlaxle reasoned, and he meant every word.
Dinan donned a disgusted expression.
"The Spider Queen, or one of Lolf's minions, has been talking with that one," Jarlaxle added, as much to himself as to his shaken companion.
At first glance, Vierna's obsession seemed a desperate, dangerous thing, but Jarlaxle had been around the chaos of Menzo Baranzon long enough to realize that many other powerful figures, Matron Baenri included, had held similar, seemingly outrageous fantasies. Nearly every important figure in Menzo Baranzon, including members of the ruling council, had come to power through acts that seemed desperate, had squirmed their way through the barbed nets of chaos to find their glory. Might Vierna be the next to cross that dangerous terrain?
Chapter 2. Together. The river Serbrin flowing in a valley far below him, Drizzt entered the eastern gate of Mithril Hall early that same afternoon. Caddy Bree had skipped in some time before him to await the surprise of his return. The dwarven guards welcomed the drow ranger as though he were one of their bearded kin.
Drizzt could not deny the warmth that flowed through him at their open welcome, though it was not unexpected, since Brunner's people had accepted him as a friend since their days in Icewind Dale. Drizzt needed no escort in the winding corridors of Mithril Hall, and he wanted none, preferring to be alone with the many emotions and memories that always came over him when he crossed this section of the upper complex. He moved across the new bridge at Garum's Gorge. It was a structure of beautiful, arching stone that spanned hundreds of feet across the deep chasm. In this place, Drizzt had lost Brunner forever, or so he had thought, for he had seen the dwarf spiral down into the lightless depths on the back of a flaming dragon. He couldn't avoid a smile as the memory flowed to completion. It would take more than a dragon to kill mighty Brunner Battlehammer. As he neared the end of the long expanse, Drizzt noticed that new guard towers, begun only 10 days before, were nearly completed, the industrious dwarves having gone at their work with absolute devotion. Still, every one of the busy dwarven workers looked up to regard the drow's passing and give Drizzt a word of greeting. Drizzt headed for the main corridors leading out of the immense chamber south of the bridge, the sound of even more hammers leading the way. Just beyond the chamber, past a small anteroom, he came into a wide, high corridor, practically another chamber in itself, where the best craftsmen of Mithril Hall were hard at work, carving into the stone wall the likeness of Brunner Battlehammer in its appropriate place beside sculptures of Brunner's royal ancestors, the 7 predecessors of his throne.
"Fine work, Adrow,"
came a call. Drizzt turned to regard a short, round dwarf with a short-clipped yellow beard barely reaching the top of his wide chest.
"Well met, Cobble," Drizzt greeted the speaker. Brunner recently had appointed the dwarf Holy Cleric of the Halls, a valued position indeed.
"Fitting?"
Cobble asked as he indicated the 20-foot-high sculpture of Mithril Hall's present king.
"For Brunner, it should be 100 feet tall," Drizzt replied.
And the good-hearted Cobble shook with laughter. The continuing roar of it echoed behind Drizzt for many steps as he again headed down the winding corridors. He soon came to the upper level's hall area, the city above the wondrous undercity. Catibri and Wulfgar roomed in this area, as did Brunner most of the time, as he prepared for the spring trading season. Most of the other 2,500 dwarves of the clan were far below, in the mines and in the undercity, but those in this region were the commanders of the House Guard and the elite soldiers. Even Drizzt, so welcomed in Brunner's home, could not go to the king unannounced and unescorted. A square-shouldered rock of a dwarf with a sour demeanor and a long brown beard that he wore tucked into a wide jeweled belt led Drizzt down the final corridor to Brunner's upper-level audience hall. General Dagna, as he was called, had been a personal attendant of King Harbrom of Citadel Adbar, the mightiest dwarven stronghold in the Northland. But the gruff dwarf had come in at the head of Citadel Adbar's forces to help Brunner reclaim his ancient homeland. With the war won, most of the Adbar dwarves had departed, but Dagna and 2,000 others had remained after the cleansing of Mithril Hall, swearing fealty to Clan Battlehammer and giving Brunner a solid force with which to defend the riches of the dwarven stronghold. Dagna had stayed on with Brunner to serve as his advisor and military commander. He professed no love for Drizzt, but certainly would not be foolish enough to insult the drow by allowing a lesser attendant to escort Drizzt to see the dwarf king.
"I told you he'd be back,"
Drizzt heard Brunner grumbling from beyond the open doorway as they approached the audience hall.
"The elf would not be missing such a thing as your wedding."
"I see they are expecting me," Drizzt remarked to Dagna.
"We heard ye was about from the folks of Settlestone,"
the gruff general replied, not looking back to Drizzt as he spoke.
"Figured ye'd come in any day."
Drizzt knew that the general, a dwarf among dwarves, as the others said, had little use for him or for anyone, Wulfgar and Catibri included, who was not a dwarf. The dark elf smiled, though,
for he was used to such prejudice and knew that Dagna was an important ally for Brunner.
"Greetings," Drizzt said to his three friends as he entered the room.
Brunner sat on his stone throne, Wulfgar and Catti Bree flanking him.
"So ye made it,"
Catti Bree said absently, feigning disinterest. Drizzt smirked at their running secret. Apparently, Catti Bree hadn't told anyone that she had met him just outside the eastern door.
"We had not planned for this,"
added Wulfgar, a giant of a man with huge corded muscles, long flowing blonde locks, and eyes the crystal blue of the Northland sky.
"I pray that there may be an extra seat at the table."
Drizzt smiled and bowed low in apology. He deserved their chiding, he knew. He had been away a great deal lately, for 10 days at a time.
"Bah!" snorted the red-bearded Brunner. "I told ye he'd come back, and back to stay this time!"
Drizzt shook his head, knowing he would soon go out again, searching for something.
"Ye hunting for the assassin elf?"
he heard Brunner ask. Never, Drizzt thought immediately. The dwarf referred to Artemis Entreri, Drizzt's most hated enemy, a heartless killer as skilled with the blade as the Drow Ranger and determined, obsessed, to defeat Drizzt. Entreri and Drizzt had battled in Kalimport, a city far to the south, with Drizzt luckily winning the upper hand before events drove them apart. Emotionally, Drizzt had brought the unfinished battle to its conclusion and had freed himself from a similar obsession against Entreri. Drizzt had seen himself in the assassin, had seen what he might have become had he stayed in Menzo Berenzon. He could not stand the image, hungered only to destroy it. Catti Bree, dear and complicated Catti Bree, had taught Drizzt the truth about Entreri and about himself. If he never saw Entreri again, Drizzt would be a happier person indeed.
"I've no desire to meet that one again," Drizzt answered.
He looked to Catti Bree, who sat impassively. She shot Drizzt a sly wink to show that she understood and approved.
"There are many sights in the wide world, dear dwarf," Drizzt went on, "that cannot be seen from the shadows. Many sounds more pleasant than the ring of steel, and many smells preferable to the stench of death." "Cook another feast," Brunner snorted, hopping up from his stone seat. "Shurin the elf has his eyes fixed on another wedding."
Drizzt let the remark pass without reply. Another dwarf rushed into the room, then exited, pulling Dagna out behind him. A moment later, the flustered general returned.
"What is it?"
Brunner grumbled.
"Another guest,"
Dagna explained, and even as he spoke, a halfling, round in the belly, bopped into the room.
"Regis!"
cried a surprised Catti Bree, and she and Wulfgar rushed over to greet their friend. Unexpectedly, the five companions were together again.
"Rumblebelly!"
Brunner shouted his customary nickname for the always hungry halfling.
"What in the nine hells?"
What indeed, Drizzt thought, curious that he had not spotted the traveler on the trails outside Mithril Hall. The friends had left Regis behind in Kalimport, more than 1,000 miles away, at the head of the Thieves' Guild the companions had all but decapitated in rescuing the halfling.
"Did you believe I would miss this occasion?"
Regis huffed, acting insulted that Brunner even doubted him.
"The wedding of two of my dearest friends?"
Catti Bree threw a hug on him, which he seemed to enjoy immensely. Brunner looked curiously at Drizzt and shook his head when he realized that the drow had no answers for this surprise.
"How'd ye know?"
the dwarf asked the halfling.
"You underestimate your fame, King Brunner,"
Regis replied, gracefully dipping into a bow that sent his belly dropping over his thin belt. The bow made him jingle as well, Drizzt noted. When Regis dipped, 100 jewels and 12 fat pouches tinkled. Regis had always loved fine things, but Drizzt had never seen the halfling so garishly bedecked. He wore a gem-studded jacket and more jewelry than Drizzt had ever seen in one place, including the magical, hypnotic ruby pendant.
"Might ye be staying long?" Catti Bree asked.
"I am in no hurry," Regis replied. "Might I have a room?"
he asked Brunner.
to put my things and rest away the weariness of a long road?
We'll see to it,
Catti Bree assured him, as Drizzt and Brunner exchanged glances once more. They both were thinking the same thing, that it was unusual for a master of a backstabbing, opportunistic thieves' guild to leave his place of power for any length of time.
And for your attendance? Brunner asked,
a loaded question.
Oh, stammered the halfling, I came alone. The southerners do not take well to the chill of a northern spring, you know.
Well, off with ye, then, commanded Brunner. Sure, and it be me turn to set out a feast for the pleasure of your belly.
Drizzt took a seat beside the dwarf king as the other three scooted out of the room.
Few folk in Kalimport have ever heard of me name, elf,
Brunner remarked when he and Drizzt were alone.
And who south of Longsaddle would be knowing of the wedding?
Brunner's sly expression showed that the experienced dwarf agreed exactly with Drizzt's feelings.
Sure, and the little one brings a bit of his treasure along with him, eh?
The dwarf king asked. He is running, Drizzt replied.
Got himself into trouble again, Brunner snorted, or I'm a bearded gnome. 5 meals a day, Brunner muttered to Drizzt after the drow and the halfling had been in Mithril Hall for a 10-day. And helpings bigger than a half-sized one should hold.
Drizzt, always amazed by Regis's appetite, had no answer for the dwarf king. Together they watched Regis from across the hall, stuffing bite after bite into his greedy mouth.
Good thing we're opening new tunnels, Brunner grumbled. I'll be needing a fair supply of mithril to keep that one fed.
As if Brunner's reference to the new explorations had been a cue, General Dagna entered the dining hall. Apparently not interested in eating, the gruff, brown-bearded dwarf waved away an attendant and headed straight across the hall toward Drizzt and Brunner.
That was a short trip,
Brunner remarked to Drizzt when they noticed the dwarf.
Dagna had gone out just that morning, leading the latest scouting group to the new explorations in the deepest mines far to the west of the Undercity.
Trouble or treasure? Drizzt asked rhetorically. And Brunner only shrugged, always expecting and secretly hoping for both.
Me king,
Dagna greeted, coming in front of Brunner and pointedly not looking at the dark elf. He dipped in a curt bow, his rock-set expression giving no clues about which of Drizzt's suppositions might be accurate.
Mithril?
Brunner asked hopefully. Dagna seemed surprised by the blunt question.
Yes,
he said at length.
The tunnel beyond the sealed door intercepted a whole new complex, rich in ore from what we can tell. The legend of your gem-sniffing nose will continue to grow, me king.
He dipped into another bow, this one even lower than the first.
Know it?
Brunner whispered to Drizzt.
Went down that way once, afore me beard even came out, killed me an Etten. But we have trouble,
Dagna interrupted, his face still expressionless. Brunner waited, and waited some more for the tiresome dwarf to explain.
Trouble?
He finally asked, realizing that Dagna had paused for dramatic effect, and that the stubborn general probably would stand quietly for the remainder of the day if Brunner didn't offer that prompt.
Goblins,
Dagna said ominously.
Brunner snorted. Thought ye said we had trouble? A fair-sized tribe, Dagna went on. Could be hundreds.
Brunner looked up to Drizzt and recognized from the sparkle in the drow's lavender eyes that the news had not disturbed his friend any more than it had disturbed him.
Hundreds of goblins, elf, Brunner said slyly. What do ye think of that?
Drizzt didn't reply. Just continued to smirk and let the gleam in his eye speak for itself. Times had become uneventful since the retaking of Mithril Hall. The only metal ringing in the dwarven tunnels was the miner's pick and shovel and the craftsman's sledge. And the trails between Mithril Hall and Silvery Moon were rarely dangerous or adventurous to the skilled Drizzt. This news held particular interest for the drow.
Drizzt was a ranger, dedicated to defending the good races, and he despised spindly-armed, foul-smelling goblins above all the other evil races in the world. Brunner led the two over to Regis's table, though every other table in the large hall was empty.
"Supper's done!" the red-bearded dwarf king huffed, sweeping the plates from in front of the halfling to land crashing on the floor. "Go and get Wulfgar!" Brunner growled into the halfling's dubious expression. "You got a count of 50 to get back to me, longer than that, and I put ye on half rations."
Regis was through the door in an instant. On Brunner's nod, Dagna pulled a hunk of coal from his pocket and sketched a rough map of the new region on the table, showing Brunner where they had encountered the goblin sign and where further scouting had indicated the main lair to be. Of particular interest to the two dwarves were the worked tunnels in the region, with their even floors and squared walls.
"Good for surprising stupid goblins,"
Brunner explained to Drizzt with a wink.
"You knew the goblins were there," Drizzt accused him,
realizing that Brunner was more thrilled and less surprised by the news of potential enemies than of potential riches.
"Figured there might be goblins," Brunner admitted. "Seen him down there once, but with the coming of the dragon, me father and his soldiers never got the time to clean the vermin out." "Still, it was a long, long time ago, elf."
The dwarf stroked his long red beard to accentuate the point.
"And I couldn't be sure they'd still be there."
"We are threatened,"
came a resonant baritone voice behind them. The 7-foot-tall barbarian moved to the table and leaned low to take in Dagna's diagram.
"Just goblins," Brunner replied. "A call to war,"
Wulfgar roared, slapping Aegis Fang, the mighty warhammer Brunner had forged for him, across his open palm.
"A call to play,"
Brunner corrected, and he exchanged a nod and chuckle with Drizzt.
"By me own eyes, don't ye two seem eager to be killing?"
Catty Bree, standing behind with Regis, put in.
"Bet on it," Brunner retorted.
"Ye found some goblins in their own hole, not to bothering anybody, and you're planning for their slaughter,"
Catty Bree went on in the face of her father's sarcasm.
"Woman!"
Wulfgar shouted. Drizzt's amused smile evaporated in the blink of an eye, replaced by an expression of amazement as he regarded the towering barbarian's scornful mien.
"Be glad for that,"
Catty Bree answered lightly, without hesitation and without becoming distracted from the more important debate with Brunner.
"How do ye know the goblins want to fight?" she asked the king. "Or do ye care?"
"There's Mithril in those tunnels,"
Brunner replied, as if that would end the debate.
"Would that make it the goblins, Mithril?"
Catty Bree asked innocently.
"Rightfully."
"Not for long,"
Dagna interjected, but Brunner had no witty remarks to add, taken aback by his daughter's surprising line of somewhat incriminating questions.
"The fight's more important to ye, to all of ye,"
Catty Bree went on, turning her knowing blue eyes to regard all four of the group,
"than any treasures to be found. Ye hunger for the excitement. Ye'd go after the goblins if the tunnels were no more than bare and worthless stone."
"Not me,"
Regis piped in, but nobody paid much attention.
"They're goblins," Drizzt said to her. "Was it not a goblin raid that took your father's life?"
"Aye,"
Catty Bree agreed.
"And if ever I find that tribe, then be knowing that they'll fall in piles for their wicked deed. But are they akin to this tribe 1,000 miles and more away?"
"Goblins is goblins," Brunner growled.
"Oh?"
Catty Bree replied, crossing her arms before her.
"And our drow, drow?"
"What talk is this?"
Wulfgar demanded as he glowered at his soon-to-be bride.
"If ye found a dark elf wandering your tunnels,"
Catty Bree said to Brunner, ignoring Wulfgar altogether, even when he stormed over to stand right beside her,
"would ye draw up your plans and cut the creature down?"
Brunner gave an uncomfortable glance Drizzt's way, but Drizzt was smiling again, understanding where Catty Bree's reasoning had led them and where it had trapped the stubborn king.
"If ye did cut him down, and if that drow was Drizzt O'Erden, Then who would ye have beside ye with the patience to sit and listen to your prideful boasts? The young woman finished.
At least I'd kill ye clean.
Brunner, his blustery bubble popped, muttered to Drizzt. Drizzt's laughter came straight from his belly.
Parley, he said at length, by the well-spoken words of our wise young friend, we must give the goblins at least a chance to explain their intentions.
He paused and looked wistfully at Catti Bree, his lavender eyes sparkling still, for he knew what to expect from goblins.
Before we cut them down.
Cleanly,
Brunner added.
She knows nothing of this,
Wulfgar griped, bringing the tension back to the meeting in an instant. Drizzt silenced him with a cold glare, as threatening a stare as had ever passed between the dark elf and the barbarian. Catti Bree looked from one to the other, her expression pained. Then she tapped Regis on the shoulder, and together they left the room.
We're going to talk to a bunch of goblins?
Dagna asked in disbelief.
Aw, shut your mouth, Brunner answered,
slamming his hands back to the table and studying the map once more. It took him several moments to realize that Wulfgar and Drizzt had not finished their silent exchange. Brunner recognized the confusion underlying Drizzt's stare, but in looking at the barbarian, he found no subtle undercurrents, no hint that this particular incident would be easily forgotten. Drizzt leaned back against the stone wall in the corridor outside Catti Bree's room. He had come to talk to the young woman, to find out why she had been so concerned, so adamant in the conference about the goblin tribe. Catti Bree had always brought a unique perspective to the trials facing the five companions, but this time it seemed to Drizzt that something else was driving her, that something other than goblins had brought the fire to her speech. Leaning on the wall outside the door, the dark elf began to understand.
You are not going, Wulfgar was saying loudly. There will be a fight. Despite your attempts to put it off, they are goblins. They'll take no parley with dwarves.
If there is a fight, then you'll be wanting me there,
Catti Bree retorted.
You are not going.
Drizzt shook his head at the finality of Wolfgar's tone, thinking that never before had he heard Wulfgar speak this way. He changed his mind, though, remembering when he first had met the rough young barbarian, stubborn and proud and talking nearly as stupidly as now. Drizzt was waiting for the barbarian when Wulfgar returned to his own room, the drow leaning against the wall casually, wrists resting against the angled hilts of his magical scimitars, and his forest-green cloak thrown back from his shoulders.
Brunner sends for me?
Wulfgar asked, confused as to why Drizzt would be in his room. Drizzt pushed the door closed. I am not here for Brunner, he explained evenly. Wulfgar shrugged, not catching on.
Welcome back, then, he said.
And there was something strained in his greeting.
Too oft you are out of the halls. Brunner desires your company.
I am here for Catti Bree, Drizzt interrupted. The barbarian's ice-blue eyes narrowed immediately, and he squared his broad shoulders, his strong jaw firm.
I know she met with you, he said, outside on the trails before you came in.
A perplexed look crossed Drizzt's face as he recognized the hostility in Wulfgar's tone. Why would Wulfgar care if Catti Bree had met with him? What in the nine hells was going on with his large friend?
Regis told me,
Wulfgar explained, apparently misunderstanding Drizzt's confusion. A superior look came into the barbarian's eye, as though he believed his secret information had given him some sort of advantage. Drizzt shook his head and brushed his thick white mane back from his face with slender fingers. I am not here because of any meeting on the trails, he said, or because of anything Catti Bree has said to me. Wrists still comfortably resting against his weapon hilts, Drizzt strolled across the wide room, stopping opposite the large bed from the barbarian. Whatever Catti Bree does say to me, though, he had to add, is none of your affair.
Wulfgar did not blink, but Drizzt could see that it took all of the barbarian's control to stop from leaping over the bed at him. Drizzt, who thought he knew Wulfgar well, could hardly believe the sight.
"How dare you?" Wulfgar growled through gritted teeth. "She is my..."
"Dare I?" Drizzt shot back. "You speak of Catti Bree as if she were your possession. I heard you tell her, command her, to remain behind when we go to the goblins."
"You overstep your bounds," Wulfgar warned.
"You puff like a drunken orc," Drizzt returned, and he thought the analogy strangely fitting. Wulfgar took a deep breath, his great chest heaving to steady himself. A single stride took him the length of the bed to the wall, near the hooks holding his magnificent warhammer.
"Once you were my teacher,"
Wulfgar said calmly. "Ever was I your friend," Drizzt replied. Wulfgar snapped an angry glare on him.
"You speak to me like a father to a child. Beware, Drizzt O'Erden, you are not the teacher anymore."
Drizzt nearly fell over, especially when Wulfgar, still eyeing him dangerously, pulled Aegis Fang, the mighty warhammer, from the wall.
"Are you the teacher now?"
the dark elf asked. Wulfgar nodded slowly, then blinked in surprise as the scimitars suddenly appeared in Drizzt's hands. Twinkle. The magical blade the wizard Malkor Harple had given Drizzt glowed with a soft blue flame.
"Remember when first we met?"
the dark elf asked. He moved around the bottom of the bed, wisely, since Wulfgar's longer reach would have given him a distinct advantage with the bed between them.
"Do you remember the many lessons we shared on Kelvin's Cairn, looking out over the tundra and the campfires of your people?"
Wulfgar turned slowly, keeping the dangerous drow in front of him. The barbarian's knuckles whitened for lack of blood as he tightly clutched his weapon.
"Remember the Verbeek?"
Drizzt asked, the thought bringing a smile to his face.
"You and I fighting together, winning together against an entire lair of giants? And the dragon icing death?"
Drizzt went on, holding his other scimitar, the one he had taken from the defeated worm's lair, up before him.
"I remember,"
Wulfgar replied quietly, calmly, and Drizzt started to slide his scimitars back into their sheaths, thinking he had sobered the young man.
"You speak of distant days," the barbarian roared suddenly, rushing forward with speed and agility beyond what could be expected from so large a man.
He launched a roundhouse punch at Drizzt's face, clipping the surprised drow on the shoulder as Drizzt ducked. The ranger rolled with a blow, coming to his feet in the far corner of the room, the scimitars back in his hands.
"Time for another lesson," he promised, his lavender eyes gleaming with an inner fire that the barbarian had seen many times before.
Undaunted, Wulfgar came on, putting Aegis Fang through a series of feints before turning it down in an overhead chop that would have crushed the drow's skull.
"Has it been too long since last we saw battle?"
Drizzt asked, thinking this whole incident a strange game, perhaps a ritual of manhood for the young barbarian. He brought his scimitars up in a blocking cross above him, easily catching the descending hammer. His legs nearly buckled under the sheer force of the blow. Wulfgar recoiled for a second strike.
"Always thinking of offense," Drizzt scolded, snapping the flat sides of his scimitars out, one two against the sides of Wolfgar's face.
The barbarian fell back a step and wiped a thin line of blood from his cheek with the back of one hand. Still, he did not blink.
"My apology," Drizzt said.